Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam. Dear listeners, Radio Sai continues its weekly presentation of the talking book version of Mr. Howard Moffat's highly acclaimed book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. The author was among the very early Westerners who came to Satya Sai Baba as a skeptic in 1964, and drawn by his enigma, he stayed for considerable periods of time near him in the next 6 years. During this period, he conducted extensive research and probing investigations into the Sai phenomena. He published his findings as the book that has become a classic of Sai literature, often considered the primer which introduced Sri Satya Sai Baba to millions round the world. This book was first published in 1971. Since then, it has been instrumental in drawing millions of seekers to the loving path of Satya Sai. These readings, dear listeners, are being aired every week, and if you wish to revisit a chapter at any time, you can do so at our website radiosai.org. So dear listeners, welcome now to Sai Baba, Man of Miracles by Howard Moffat.
Sai Ram, and welcome to Radio Sai's Talking Book Session. This is a presentation of select excerpts from Mr. Howard Moffat's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. We are now at Chapter 8, titled, With Baba in the Hills. To start off this chapter, the author quotes none else but Baba himself. Quote, "Come to me with empty hands. I shall fill them with gifts and grace." Unquote. So far, we have only heard Mr. Moffat narrate experiences of Sai devotees based on his extensive interviews and investigations. But today, we will listen to a few of his personal experiences, an account of his personal trysts with Satya Sai and his miracles. Swami had invited both Mr. Moffat and his wife, Iris, to join him at Whitefield in Bangalore. During the course of their stay there, Swami informed them secretly about his plan to take a few devotees to Horsley Hills. The couple was among the lucky few. What happened in Horsley Hills? Would Mr. Moffat start believing that Sai miracles were much more than mere sleight of hand? The experience which he had was beyond comprehension.
Right at the crest of the hills, some 4,800 feet above sea level, we came to the White Circuit House, our destination. Being the only married couple in the party, Iris and I were given a suite to ourselves. This was only 2 doors from Baba's suite. No matter how early we arose in the crisp mornings, we found that Baba was already up, usually sitting, writing by his open door. Sometime during the morning after breakfast with us, he would gather all of us into a room for a spiritual discourse. One afternoon, soon after our arrival, we all went for a drive and, leaving the cars, strolled about on a rocky knoll of hills. Baba several times picked up a piece of broken rock, played with it a while, and then threw it away. Finally, just as we were returning, he kept a piece about the size of a man's closed fist and carried it back to the circuit house. Arriving there, he took us into one of the suites and sat on the carpet while we sat in a semicircle around him. He began to talk conversationally on everyday topics, occasionally throwing the piece of rock a couple of feet in the air and letting it fall on the floor. Presently, he tossed it over to me, asking, "Can you eat that?" I examined the rock closely. It was hard granite, streaky and rather lightish in color. I admitted its inedibility and bowled it back to him. He was not more than 2 yards away from me. He took the stone and, still chatting casually, threw it in the air again, while a dozen pair of eyes watched expectantly. I felt that something strange was going to happen and never let the stone out of my sight. Now, as it lay on the carpet, I could see a slight change in its appearance. Although of exactly the same size and shape, and still streaky, it was a little lighter in color than before. Swami rolled it back to me across the carpet. "Can you eat it now?" he asked. To my amazement and joy, it was no longer rock, but sugar candy. Baba broke it into pieces, giving us each a portion to eat. It was sweet and delicious, as candy should be. "Is this an illusion?" I wondered. "Are we all hypnotized?" So I put a piece in my pocket. I still have it, and to this day, it is still sugar candy. One sparkling morning, I was walking with Swami and the two teenage youths in the garden of Circuit House. Baba was wearing an ochre-colored robe which fell like a smooth cylinder from shoulders to ground. As Iris had ironed some of his robes a couple of days earlier, I knew for certain that they contained neither pockets nor places where anything could be concealed. His sleeves were straight and loose, without cuffs. He carried nothing in his hands. One of the young men was returning to Bombay next day and wanted to take photos of Swami, so the latter posed for several pictures. Occasionally, as we strolled and talked, he paused to pick a berry or a bud from one of the shrubs. This he would examine with the concentration and thoughtfulness of a botanist. Then after a while, he would throw it away as if it were not quite suitable to some purpose he had in mind. Finally, he picked a small bud from a bush, examined it, seemed satisfied, and handed it to me, saying, "Keep that." Soon afterwards, we went back up the steps to the front entrance. Baba did not go to his own suite, but walked straight into ours. He sat on an armchair while the young men, my wife and I, gathered around him on the carpet. Swami asked for the bud that he had given me. I handed it to him, and he held it in his fingers for a while, discussing it. "What flower is it?" he asked. We confessed our ignorance. He suggested that it might be a button rose, and we agreed. Then looking at me, he asked, "What do you want it to become?" I was at a loss to know what to say, so I replied, "Anything you like, Swami." He held it in the palm of his right hand, closed his fist, and blew into it. Then he asked me to stretch out my hand. I gasped, and my wife gave a squeal of delight as from the theurgic hand that held the flower bud, there fell into my open palm a glittering diamond of brilliant cut. In size it matched the bud which had completely vanished. Baba graciously presented me with this beautiful and amazing product of transmutation magic. I still have it. We were on the floor around Baba expecting a morning discourse, perhaps one of those wonderful stories from Indian mythology, which led the mind to the deeper truths of life. However, before talking, he showed us a green leaf and wrote on it with his fingernail. Then he handed the leaf to me, but I could make nothing of the reading, which he said was a mantram in Sanskrit. Next, he asked for a book, and one of the ladies who occupied the suite passed him her Telugu grammar. Placing the leaf between the pages, he shut the book and tapped its cover several times. Now he opened it and took out the leaf. The writing was still on it, but instead of being green and fresh, as it had been a moment before, it was brown and so dry that it easily crumbled into dust. Baba tossed the book on the carpet nearby and after talking for a while, left the room. Well, I thought, on the face of it, this miracle would not stand up to the skeptic. The brown leaf could have been somehow planted in the book earlier, so I picked up the volume and searched its pages for the missing green leaf, but could find nothing. "Why do I doubt?" I asked myself, when I have seen him do so many things, equally incredible and inexplicable. Sai Baba had somehow blasted this leaf, as another one who stood above nature had blasted a tree 2,000 years ago. It was as if, for the leaf, many months of summer had been telescoped into that one magical moment when Baba tapped the book.
Mr. Murfitt, a man of practical intelligence, notes that on the subtle planes of being, to interpenetrate our physical plane of existence, there may be classes of entities for whom our physical space would be actually non-existent. are here and there would be all one to them. He writes that the ancient wisdom does mention such beings. Ancient wisdom, he says, also teaches that a physical object can be disintegrated into a subtler substance or energy system, which can be moved by some agency at near light speed and reintegrate to form the original object.
At Horsley Hills, Sai Baba produced a particularly striking example of such telekinesis. One evening, some of us were sitting on the carpet in his suite. Ramnath Reddy, the doctor, the young men, Iris and I were there. Swami asked me the year of my birth when I told him. He said that he would get for me from America a coin minted there in that same year. He began to circle his downturned hand in the air in front of us, making perhaps half a dozen small circles, saying all the while, "It's coming now, coming, here it is." Then he closed his hand and held it before me, smiling as if enjoying my eager expectancy. When the coin dropped from his hand to mine, I noted first that it was heavy and golden. On closer examination, I found, to my delight, that it was a genuine, milled American $10 coin with the year of my birth stamped beneath a profile head of the Statue of Liberty. "Born the same year as you?" Swami smiled. What the skeptics would say about this, I wondered. Would they suggest that Baba carried around with him a stock of coins so that he would have one to match my year of birth? Such old American coins, now long out of circulation, would not be easy for him to obtain in India through normal channels. I have no doubt whatever that this was one of Baba's many genuine apports. While he circled his hand before us, some agency under his will had dematerialized this gold coin at some place, somewhere, carried it at space annihilating velocity, and rematerialized it in Sai Baba's hand. From where did it come? Who knows? Baba would never say. Perhaps from some old hoard, hidden, lost, forgotten long ago, and now belonging to no one alive.
Although the author had come to know through first-hand experience that Sai Baba was certainly not an impostor, and that his miracles were genuine, the use of sand as a medium for production was fuel for his skepticism. Baba had a cure for this as well.
An objective psychical researcher, on hearing the stories of the sand wonders, is bound to raise the queries, are the objects previously planted in the sand? Or does Baba, by some lightning sleight of hand, slip them in just before he digs them out? In fact, for anyone who had neither seen the miracles for themselves, nor felt the spiritually elevating presence of Sai Baba, I suspected that sand productions must leave a bigger question mark in the mind than other productions. The first point I want to make clear about my Horsley Hills experience of Baba's sand productions is that on the journey from Circuit House to the place of the miracles, I sat in the front of the car with Sai Baba and Raja Reddy, who was driving. Baba carried nothing in his hands, and he was wearing his usual robe. None of the objects later produced could have been concealed on his person. A few miles from Circuit House, the car and several other vehicles following it stopped by the roadside. We all got out and went to a patch of sand some 50 yards away, which had been seen from the road on an earlier journey. Baba asked the young men in the party to make him a sand platform, so they scraped and pushed the sand with their hands to build a flat stage about a foot high and 4 feet square. Baba sat cross-legged in the middle of this, and the party clustered in a semicircle around him. I was in the front row of the spectators, right at the edge of the sand platform. The thought passed through my mind that if any object had previously been buried here, near where Baba was sitting, he would have had to dig down more than a foot through the newly piled sand to reach it. Laughing, and with the expression of a happy child playing on a beach, he scooped up the sand to form a little mound above the drawing, about 6 inches high. Still with an air of happy expectation, he put his fingers lightly into the top of the mound, perhaps an inch down, and drew out, head first, a silvery shining figure, like the drawing he had made. It was a statue of the god Vishnu, about 4 inches in height. He held it up for everyone to see, then put it to one side, smoothed out the mound before him to make a flat surface again, and began once more to discuss spiritual topics. Soon, he made another drawing in the sand on the same spot as before. Again, he scooped sand over it, making a mound, a wider, flat-topped one this time. Again, with a happy chuckle, he felt with his fingertips into the top of the mound and scraped a little sand away. Less than an inch down was a photograph. He pulled it out, shook the yellow grains away, and held it up for us to see. It was a glossy, black-and-white print about 10 inches by 8. He passed it around for some of us to look at closely, and later I examined it at leisure back at our quarters. It was a photograph of the Hindu gods and avatars, standing in two rows to form a forward-pointing arrowhead, with Lord Krishna in the foreground at the tip. Heads of Satya Sai Baba and Shirdi Baba could be seen as small inserts on the body of Krishna. This print, I felt, was not produced in any earthly studio. Baba later gave it to Mrs. and Mr. T.A. Ramanath Reddy, our hosts. It stood with the unearthed statue of Vishnu for some days on a side table in the dining room at Circuit House. But there was one supreme production from that sand patch of which we all had a share. Baba did this outline sketch, which I could see from where I sat was a little container of some kind. Then, in the usual way, he scrapped the top sand with his open hands to make a tiny hill above the drawing. Pausing a moment with a delighted smile, he felt into the crown of the hill and took out a silver-colored container. This was of circular shape with a neck and a screw top. At a guess, its spherical bowl would be perhaps 2.5 inches in diameter. Sai Baba unscrewed the lid and a wonderful perfume pervaded the air. Putting the container to one side, he went through the same process again of drawing and mound building. This time the product was a golden spoon like a small teaspoon. With this, he stirred the contents of the bowl and, standing up, began to give some to each of us, his spectators. Like the others, I opened my mouth while he poured a spoonful onto my tongue. The word that came to my mind was ambrosial. It seemed nothing less than the food of the gods. It suggested a mixture of the essences of the most heavenly fruits, the divine archetypes of the loveliest fruits of earth. The taste is quite indescribable. It has to be experienced. The devotees call this glorious nectar Amrita, which has much the same meaning as ambrosia, the food of the immortals. So here are the answers to the 2 points raised by my inner psychical researcher. First, the objects could not have previously been hidden in the sand patch ready for Baba to take out because they came from the top of a mound made before our eyes on the top of a foot-thick sand stage, also built while we watched. Secondly, even if Baba could have carried the objects to the sand patch that night without my seeing them, an utter impossibility, he could not by the most expert legerdemain have slipped such articles as a glittering idol, a large photograph, a bulky japamala, and a shining bowl of nectar into the sand under our noses, without our being aware of the fact. If he could, he is superior to the most expert conjurer and should be making fame and fortune on the stage as an entertainer. Quite apart from the miraculous production of such objects, there is the strange mystery of the Amrita itself. Its ambrosial, out-of-this-world quality, its power, shown on various occasions to increase in quantity to meet the needs of whatever numbers happen to be present. What I wondered was its actual significance. I determined to ask Sai Baba about this at the first opportunity.
This brings us to the end of Chapter 8. That is all for today. Till we meet next time, all the best and Jai Sai Ram. You have been listening to a presentation of excerpts from Mr. Howard Murfitt's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. This book has been published in 1971 by Frederick Miller Limited in London.